long Indian file, as when herons take wing. The white birds were now all flying towards Ahab's boat. And when, within a few yards, began fluttering over the water there, wheeling round and round with joyous, expectant cries, their vision was keener than man's. Ahab could perceive no sign in the sea. But suddenly, as he peered down and down into the depths, he profoundly saw a white living spot, no bigger than a white weasel, with wonderful celerity uprising and magnifying as it rose till it turned, and then there were plainly revealed two long, crooked rows of white, glistening teeth floating up from the undiscoverable bottom. Were you to look up this passage in your own copy of Moby Dick, found in the 133rd chapter, you might notice a single word to be different. For Melville wrote it one way in the American version, and another way for publication in the UK. The first reads, Ahab could discover no sign in the sea, while the latter, as I have it here, reads, Ahab could perceive no sign in the sea. The latter, considered both with regard to its poetic quality and with regard to its metaphorical and philosophical insight, is the superior formulation. But disregarding here the poetic quality, we must ask, why is it superior? The faculties of perception serve all animals as the ordinary means by which we discover the world we inhabit. But our specifically human discoveries are not limited to what perception alone conveys. For, through perception, we human beings, imbued with intellect, discover realities themselves unperceived. Ishmael, the narrator of Moby Dick, relates to us in this passage certain realities perceived, which themselves in fact signify realities not yet grasped by sight. The birds, their motion, signifies an anticipation of the whale's emergence before Ahab, or anyone else for that matter, can see anything. An anticipation which is much, I believe Melville suggests here, whether intentionally or not, an anticipation much like that of an angel, a loftier being unconstrained by tether to the earth, who grasps clearly the ruination of our lives well before we come to know it ourselves. Leaving aside with the poetry the allegorical tropes embodied in the passage, however, let us return our attention again to this contrast between discovery and perception, and let us do so by way of the word's respective etymologies. To perceive is to grasp thoroughly, from per, meaning through to the end, or thoroughly, and capere, meaning to seize or to grasp. We often, indeed always, in the conscious moments of our day, for that matter, we often sense the world without truly perceiving it. We never can perceive the whole of our sensory environment. For the grasp, which is characteristic of perception, much like the grasp of a hand, requires simultaneous exclusion of whatever is not grasped. That is the nature of a grasp. In selecting simultaneously, it deselects. My hand can grasp a book in front of me, perhaps two books, maybe even three. But unless they are small books, thin books, easily grasped volumes, it quickly becomes impossible for my hand to grasp more. My hands can only hold so much. Though, worth noting, they can touch much more without grasping, and may further touch many things which they are not capable of embracing in the manner of a grasp. No doubt you have some awareness of this already in your own experience. But reach out, touch something, touch the books on your desk, your shelves, album covers, the arms of your chair, anything in arm's reach at all. As soon as you grasp one of these, you find your hand is determined to this rather than that. But think also of how much you may touch which eludes your grasp. You might spread your hand wide as you reach out for your shelves and touch more books than you could hold at once. You could also extend your hand to the floor or the walls, or you could go outside and find a thick-trunked tree or a large stone, or you could look down and spread your arms as wide as you can and try to grasp the earth itself, or to hold the wind or water, and so on and on and on. Likewise, my eyes can see many things, but they focus now on the cover of the book, now the spine. I can, through each of these, perceive the book as a whole, but I cannot perceive this book as a whole and at the same time perceive another book as a whole. I must alternate between them, or if they are somehow perceived in sameness, whether by common shape and coloration in cover or perhaps by a simple contiguity in space, in such a case, I am perceiving the collection as a whole, but perceiving the collection is not the same as perceiving each book separately as a whole unto itself. I may look up at the vast expanse of the sky, but I cannot simultaneously perceive together east and west horizons. I can look up at the starry night, but if my eyes see the constellational pattern of Ursa Major, they cannot at the same time see that of Aquila. Always, always, perception is exclusionary. Contrariwise, to discover is to remove the covering. Dis, meaning the opposite, and cover coming from cooperire, meaning to cover up or cover over. Where perception consists in a kind of exclusionary grasp, discovery means an unveiling, a revelation. Our ability for discovery, to be sure, is, alongside perception, a limited ability. But discovery is not by its nature exclusionary. It is not a seizing. Our contrast of discovery with perception should not be misunderstood to align with the contrast of intellectual and perceptual intelligence. Rather, it is more like the contrast of touching with grasping. Discovery, that is, belongs both to perception, or sense perception more broadly, and intellect, but discovery is not perception. It's something which comes through it. Ahab could not perceive the white whale. His stare into the depths shows us that he, in fact, never could, even when he did see it. For the whale rises from the undiscoverable bottom with speed unimaginable, teeth too horrible to comprehend, and yet Ahab... If you found this interesting and want to hear more, register today and join us in our studies.